fog eye with a dusty grin. Rhymes dirty like cuts from rusty pins. If we ain't rockin' shows, we bustin' in. Fucked up from kush blunts and cups of gin. Cause after all, the drugs, they suck me in. Like wolves in the full moon, let the hunt begin. Got the mind of a madman, never come within. Throw punchlines like uppercuts that bust your chin. My mental leaves instrumentals dead. Pencil lead kills like influenza spread. All across the globe, my thoughts control. 15-minute rappers go from hot to cold. Watch the road and watch the path I walk. Past the par, spaced out like astronauts. Find me high, eyes crossed with a flask of scotch. The raps I got, shark just like cattle prod. Smash the spot like dropping live grenades. Words blast like handguns and homicidal rage. It gets bloody like dying in a lion's cage. And if you live through the night, you won't survive the day. But that's okay, you were finished from start. Brought a knife to a gunfight, my syllables scar. Primacy, the menace, flips sicker than SARS. Send the school out your league like you swimming with sharks.
Like a bad dream, I'm worse when you sleep. Physically,
physically, hyperbolically. Alright, hoods up, you motherfuckers. Welcome back to Black Hoodie Alchemy. As always, I'm your host, Anthony Tyler. Got another special guest in with us. But before I introduce her a little bit, just some quick pleasantries as usual. Show description to find anything about our guest, Miss Leticia Martinez. You can find anything to follow up with me, whether it be the Patreon. You can hop on the Black Hoodie Alchemy Discord. It's all pretty fresh stuff that I try to get going with the new year. And things have been, got a lot of cool people on the Discord so far. It's been a lot of fun to see the interaction, and check out the show description for all that bullshit, my books and whatever else. And I think that's about it. So without further ado, my guest, Miss Leticia Martinez, is with me here today. She is a very legitimate alchemist, someone that has been steeped in herbal medicines and holistic healing for her entire career. She deals with many clients, has her own electronic, digital journal, on social media outlets and so forth, called Journal Chaotica, covering a lot of the esoteric and holistic and uncovered, gets into news type events and things like that as well. Just trying to, get into the esoteric of everything. Leticia is very eclectic in the best of ways. She even has an alchemical story related to cancer that's currently in remission. So she's got quite a story there. I'm very curious to hear more about that. And I guess, vague disclaimer, I'm not a medical professional. Leticia is probably going to have some unique, interesting food for thought for you there. And she has a lot more to say. She's a lot more disciplined in the medical professions than I am, massage therapy and all sorts of different things. So, but that said, do your own research, follow your own path. But I think this is going to be great food for thought. And it's not just going to be about cancer and things like that, but the alchemical process at large. You know the drill on this show. And also, if you find, if you're looking for more content along these lines, I invite you to check out episode 80, where I talked to Justin Otto and Max Comas about these similar things. The same things essentially, but more so from an Eastern perspective, Max being a yogic instructor and Justin being a Buddhist meditation instructor. So that was very interesting as well. So Leticia, thank you for joining me, and how are you today?
Good, thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and shout out, much appreciation to you. We've known each other for a while online, the mutual friends like Melissa Martell and Ron Patton and cool show hosts and different people. And you've been listening to the show pretty consistently, and I really appreciate that. So really happy to get you on here. Let's see, where do we start? I think a good place as usual is a little bit about yourself. What have you done that you'd like to highlight, and what got you here? You mentioned we have very similar ideas on things and very similar interests. You mentioned a very animistic belief system. So yeah, I'd love to give you the floor and just here you go for a little bit.
What brought me here? Well, I was raised by two counterculture parents. Both have indigenous ancestry. My mother's side of the family abandoned indigenous practices pretty much, but my father's side kept them up. And my grandmother was a curandera and a midwife, and I got most of my herbal lore and knowledge through her. And then I continued with other teachers as I grew older. So my mom and dad had, they were always picking up really cool books from the thrift store and cool magazines. And I'm really fond of street zines and street publications.
Nice.
And free press, Freeper, you know, community rags. I'm really into those because I grew up reading those. And at the time, my mom and dad were pretty liberal. And so we did get a lot of liberal political publications like Utney Reader and The Progressive and In These Times. And so that's where my eclecticness comes from, because my influences were my parents' friends and their awesome vinyl collection and all our cool books and staying up late watching Twilight Zone and Outer Limits with my dad, because my dad was really into paranormal and
awesome.
had a few extraterrestrial encounters on job sites. And so that's where it all comes from. And they raised us also to be exposed to many types of belief systems and religions. My mother tried to put me through Catholic school to catechism, and that was a big failure because I was so scared of the visuals and the conversations. A child was listening to these conversations, and it was just really weird. And I just said, "Mom, I can't do this. I'm not going anymore. I can't. I just can't."
Yeah, so Christianity and Catholicism, it could get very intense.
Yeah, I like talking to bugs and staring at the clouds better than getting up early on Saturday to go to a catechism. So she never bothered me again about. Because she was raised by her grandmother. She wasn't raised by her mother. So she was raised in a very, very strict Catholic. Actually, my great-grandmother was a Opus Dei Catholic. So she was kind of intensely Catholic. Like, she used to do flagellation and all that kind of stuff.
Wow. That is intensely Catholic. Yeah.
So yeah, that's not for me. It's not for me.
Yeah. They're cool. I guess there is some demographic, you know, like even today, there's even the people that like hang themselves on the hooks and like swing around as performance art. Like, oh, I just can't imagine. But clearly it does something for some people, the endorphin rush and whatever else. I cannot imagine flagellating myself, though. That is next level.
Not for me.
Yeah. Holistic. I don't have like a definition in front of me. I'm very familiar with the word, but so we can set the stage for the conversation a little bit. How would you describe holistic medicine and holistic therapy for everybody?
It's integrative medicine of the mind, body, and spirit, because all those three things can affect your health if they're out of balance. If they need to be sedated, tonified, stimulated. So that's how we see the body, as something that needs to be adjusted, toned, corrected, fixed, healed, rather than cut, given pills. So we try to get the body to heal itself. We try to give the owner of the body the tools and methods to heal themselves, because you can't keep going to a healer your entire life. You have to become a healer at some point yourself. Amen. I would love to keep taking people's money all day long, but I want people to heal themselves. I want people to learn how to eat for their body type and for their situation and all those things so that they are their own healer, because you should become your own healer. You should not have to rely on somebody all the time. You shouldn't rely on doctors all the time. You need to like be responsible, take control of your health. And also the mind is a big part of being healthy. If your mind isn't healthy, your body won't be healthy.
Yeah. I hear more and more about how, like, it's a common sentiment that like it's silly or naive to consider everyone unique in some way. It's like, oh, if we're all special, then nobody's special. So that's a dumb idea. It's like, not really.
No,
like,
not really.
Yeah. You even just look into basic health. Like, everyone's body is a little different. And I was vegetarian for some years, and animal rights were a part of it. I still don't like the big, cattle production type situations, but no. But I'm not a vegetarian anymore, and a lot of that was just specifically dietary. Like, long story short, among other things, I have stomach issues. Like, it just runs in the family, and you definitely have to eat a lot more as a vegetarian, and especially a vegan if you're going that far. And so like, my stomach just couldn't handle some of the things that I had to eat and the sheer amount that I had to eat. And so I just need more concentrated, like meat, among other things. So I keep it moderated. I try not to go crazy with it, but yeah, good. I feel where you're coming from there. And how does homeopathy work into this?
I don't practice homeopathy. I studied it, and it's just, I never aligned with it. It works for me. Certain remedies work for me, but because I'm sort of biased against it, I don't really have a opinion on it. Because I find that when I had used it in my practice, people didn't get relief, and I felt really bad for them. And I'm going by the formulas and the way I was taught, and it's always been homeopathy has always been one thing that I could never really quite get how it works exactly, because I know you can't have mint and pepper and cayenne. You've got to eliminate a lot of stuff from your diet to make it work and things like that. So I agree.
So
I didn't have good results with my clients, so I have a bias against it, but if some people do well with it, that's fine. But for me, some remedies work for me and others didn't do anything. And, I had a bad experience with clients not getting relief, so I don't offer it anymore. So.
Yeah. That's always been one that's confused me a little bit. I feel like I don't even have like a list or anything. But there's been times where I've used certain homeopathic products and it seemed to have worked. Like, I think like for swimmer's ear as a kid, you get the swimmer ear drops and like over the counter, that's all like homeopathic, and that seemed to help. But I think that's honestly some of my only experience with it. And it's kind of a curious concept. But okay. So we got some definitions here. And we know what we're working with. So I would like to get into, because I think this will open up the field to all sorts of different avenues of conversation. The cancer story that you've got here, like, the just seems like a pretty epic journey. And
it was.
Yeah, to clarify for listeners, you are in remission now, so God bless. And it is something where you were seeking out, you're going to the doctors and everything, and at a certain point, you said, I have to take matters into my own hands to some extent. So, and a lot of that was very alchemical, and that's where your holistic training came in. So yeah, I'd love to give you as much time as you like to talk about that.
I'll try to shorten the story as much as possible. I have a variety of autoimmune conditions, because I was born with a gene mutation that's an umbrella for a bunch of different conditions and diseases. And So that's been since childhood. And so for the last 10 years, I've had this fatigue that keeps increasing and increasing. And I was going to every doctor I possibly could. And, you know, people rolled their eyes at me and were calling me hypochondriac. And then also some of the specialists were saying, you know, you're just going to have to accept that this fatigue is going to be a part of your life because you have, you know, this gene defect. And so I just felt like something was wrong. So during all my routine, because cancer runs on both sides of family, so we're routinely tested for the cancers that run in our family. And so this year I got to add genetic counseling to my treatment. And we found out I had some gene mutations for cancer. And then this is at the same time, I have all these things scheduled and I am taking care of other tests and whatnot. And I go get my mammogram and the technician says, have you ever had ultrasound before? And I said, oh, no. She goes, well, I'm going to ask the pathologist to add that today. So we added it. So like I do all my regular testing and everything's always been fine. So this time, the ultrasound detected it. And because it's a rare genetic cancer, it was undetectable through conventional methods of testing. So when this the nurse added the ultrasound to it, she changed the game. And when they did the ultrasound, they're like, oh my God, you have like this mass that's the size of a grapefruit in your body.
Oh my God.
And stuff. And so they then more tests were ordered and then we figured out what was wrong. And then, you know, I'm all like, okay, I know what's wrong. We're going to go to the oncologist and we're going to figure this out. Well, I didn't know, as much as I've studied cancer and I've had cancer in my family, it's the science is always changing. The treatments are always changing. Everything's always changing. The politics of cancer and medical health management's always changing. So
yeah, it's quite a tangled web.
So I thought I had in my mind, I go, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to have a surgery, I'm going to have a variety of treatments to choose from. And then, you know, I'll be fine because there are people that have rapid cures and rapid remission. And so I was expecting that all this was going to happen, but I did not know that this rare genetic cancer was pretty much treatment resistant. Very few treatments can address it. It's a mutation where if a medication works, the mutation can trick my immune system to not allow the medication to work anymore. So then they have to find another medicine. So they pretty much said, you're untreatable. You are unresectable, which means we can't do a surgery. You're probably likely terminal. And then they did more tests and they said, well, according to the AI calculator, because they're using these AI calculators in diagnosis now. Weird. Which I can't stand because wow. I felt as sick as I was and everything, I always felt like my life force is very, very strong. So I'm like, no, I don't accept this. And so I said, can I have copies of all my records? And I go home and I research and figure out what to do because they're trying to put me in hospice in a few months. And then they're telling me, and a few months after that I would probably be dead. And I don't accept that this is the truth. And so I started contacting researchers, looking up academic research work and going to the different cancer research hospitals, contacting people. And like, they're all wanting to take me. So I'm like, well, I can't be traveling to all these different places. I need to figure out what to do. And so I go back to the doctor. And so all they would offer me was a hormone blocker because this cancer is fed by hormones and proteins in the body. So they gave me this hormone blocker. That was the only thing they were going to do for me. So I'm in contact with all these researchers and doing all my research and studying stuff. And then I find out that I could change the diet because I can eliminate things from my diet. And that'll help because the cancer was already in my bones. So I eliminated things from my diet. But then found out there's all these medications that can be used off-label for things. And so I composed a protocol for myself that was part medicine, conventional medicine, and then part of it was kind of like clandestine research chemicals.
Wow.
That I got access to, and a lot of herbs. And I would go on my daily herb walks and look around for things and see what was calling to me. And so there's lots of stuff where I live that was calling to me, and I would forage it, harvest it, go home, look it up, because the plants completely talking to me, like, you need to take me, you need to, like, pick me, take me home, and you're going to make, you know, decoction or tea or whatever. So, like, plants were, like, talking to me. And so I was gathering stuff, and there was lots of things where I live that are in my arsenal right now too. So it's like, nice. Wow, this is really cool. And so
yeah.
I also did the Rick Simpson protocol, the 90 days of Rick Simpson oil, but because I already use cannabis, I go, I'm just going to jump in and start doing a gram a day, which I did.
Oh.
I did a wow. gram a day. And so when I had my first scan to test me to see if that medication they gave me was working, but they didn't know all the other stuff I was doing, because I was also doing light therapy and sound therapy and wow. electromagnetic field therapy. I had been using a Tesla coil and
wow.
I'm using like everything I could possibly get my hands on. So they don't know all this stuff I'm doing on the side. So I go get my scan and they're like, what's going on? And the pathologist calls the doctor. She needs to come in and do it again because something's not right. So I go back in and go do it again. And he's like, what's going on? There's nothing there.
Oh my God.
It's gone. All of it was gone. All of it was gone. The only thing I had was because I killed the tumor. It was, becoming necrotic. The tumor was dead, so it was putrid in my body, and so I was having this anaerobic bacterial sepsis from it. So then that's when I got the mastectomy, because it's like, take it off, because I don't want it. And once that thing was gone, it was like I felt so much better afterwards, and like within a few days I just felt like I'm healed. This is cool.
Wow. Oh my God. That is harrowing. Holy shit.
But only a few of the doctors, I have like 15 doctors that I see. Only a few of them know that I'm doing this. Only a few of them support me in doing it. The other ones I can't tell because they'll kick me out. They'll kick me out.
Yeah. They probably look at you like Andy Kaufman balancing crystals on himself before he died. Like that's what people think, like, you know, that's where their brain goes, whether or not Andy Kaufman comes to mind, like that's what they're afraid of. And, I'm glad, first of all, that, that you're doing well now, and that you have at least like a few doctors that you're able to open up to a little bit. 'Cause that is obviously few and far between in the medical field. What is it? Is it allopathic? Is that what they call it? Yeah.
Allopathic.
Symptom treatment instead of the holistic approach. Man, where to begin there? So first off, because it's some of the bit of contribution I can give, for context, like for any listeners out there, RSO, the Rick Simpson oil, it's the colloquial term, because Rick Simpson popularized it in the modern day for just full spectrum cannabis extract. Like you don't want the blonde, like dabs or hash, like you want the tarry looking, like full spectrum. It's got everything in there, even all the cannabinoids where we don't understand the first thing about them because we haven't gotten to those studies yet. There's so much going on in cannabis that we just don't understand, but we know plenty enough to know that it's therapeutic. And so, and you, the regular dosage is I have some RSO right here. I like to take that instead of edibles. It's it just gets in your body and it's great for like evening time and things like that. You take like a grain of rice, like it's to get you a little bit of a buzz, to get it feeling good in your body. A grain of rice. So a gram is astonishing. Like, what was that like getting your body used to that alone?
It was hard in the beginning, but like after about 10 grams, my body was starting to get used to it.
Wow. Was the room just like constantly spinning? Did you get like vertigo from like too much THC and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh, yeah. harrowing. Wow. You are a champion.
So I started doing it at night because I could sleep through it. And also I'd get the maximum absorption through my intestinal tract because I'd be asleep and I'd be doing it. Because sometimes in the daytime you'd eat or you'd have to go to the bathroom and then you'd lose it. So I would do it at night and it was more effective, I think, doing it at night. But I love it. I mean, I still do 10 grams a month. And
nice.
You know, I swear by it. It does so much for your health. And in Israel, they use Rick Simpson oil in their oncology.
Really?
And mushrooms. They use all kinds of mushrooms too. They've got medicine. There's a company called Cannabotech from Israel, and they're doing cannabis and mushroom-based oncology treatments.
Wow.
They're not available here. So I had to do a copycat of what they're actually doing. It's amazing, amazing stuff.
Howdy do, everybody. It's your good old friend Tippy Patson here. I'm reporting to you from the dang old New York City, the Windy Apple. You know, I shipped myself here in a crate, just like I did going to Finland. And, you know, I'm here meeting up with NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers. You know, I didn't know, I got in contact with him, but I didn't quite know, you know, where he was. So when I got here, just kind of hung out with some alley cats for a while. But then Aaron Rodgers contacted me, and, you know, and I've been staying with him in his big old mansion. You know, I got him smoking cigarettes for his cardio. I got some aluminum in his diet. And, you know, dang old, just been really focusing on that mind-body connection, you know, because he done been injured. And, you know, he done scared of the Hat Man from his ayahuasca trip still. So, been focusing on a lot of music therapy, actually. He's a great dang old guitarist, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers right here. He can't really talk right now. He's kind of busy. He's got a mouth full of noodles. But, you know, he's waving to y'all. And we're going to have more updates about my time here in the Windy Apple. But, you know, that music therapy, maybe some of y'all remember my good old friend Randy Stamp. So, we got him singing. He met up with us here at the Windy Apple, and Aaron Rodgers playing guitar. I'm on bass. We got a drum kit, and Jeff Mamba over in the Everglades, our buddy, he is, you know, doing background vocals over Zoom. And, you know, our band name, we don't really have a band name yet, but I got a song for you here, and I'm very excited. So y'all get ready. This is called Tippy Patson's Fight Song. And stick around for more. This is just a teaser. We're going to have a lot more for you. We're going to complete this song before too long. I tell you what, it's going to be a hoot.
Yeah, I just want to the door to every place. There's a wild ring in the dog, Tippy Patson. He don't take no orders. He's a rebel through and through. Wrestling Illuminati Gators is what he do. You know it. Tippy Patson, king of the swamp. With a rebel yell and a whiskey on top. He's fighting alligator, defying the odds. Tippy Patson, the man with the biggest and only.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Is Jeff Mamba? And last time we talked, we were trying to discuss whether I should be. We were talking about my name, and I asked everybody to vote on my name. Should I be Jeff Mamba, Mind Master, or Mind Jockey, or Mind Surfer? And I'm going to go with Mind Jockey because that sounds the best. And I think it makes the most sense, you know, because it's like a horse jockey except for your mind. And Mamba is my last name. And, you know, to blow your mind a little bit, to put the horse in the stable of your mind. So do you guys like know how like Hiram Abiff was the original Freemason, and he built Solomon's temple, and he's like the original bricklayer. Well, I'm here to tell you that I've recently uncovered there are like Herculean deified characters. We'll call them deities in every one of these trades. I don't know all their names, and I'm still uncovering this massive conspiracy, but I have evidence of the Eternal Plumber. You know, the guy who, like, deals with pipes. And there is also the Infernal Electrician, because he's, like, zip-zappy and things. I've also heard talk of the Lollipop Guild, and there's, like, Suicidal Dentistry or something like that. But there's a whole coalition. Maybe this is actually part of the Illuminati. It's not, like, families. It's all the original... like brick is the original bricklayer and plumber and dentist and like pottery maker and like beer can maker. These people, you know, all the original tradesmen are ruling us. Yeah. Okay, so Jeff Mamba, Mind Jockey, over and out. Arg, matey. It's me, Muscle Tornado. I don't know, guys. I've just kind of lost the will to live, I think. I'm not suicidal. You know, I'm not trying to end it, but... I've been trying to do the whole pirate thing, and... you know, it feels like something I need to do, but I feel like a fraud. You know, all of you know that I've lost my eye and my hand and my leg. I've lost my hair. My DMT guy is just gone also. He's been out for a long time, and I'm getting tired of snorting pixie sticks, guys. So I've got the pirate hat, but it's not really making me feel a whole lot better. And why, God? Why, God? Why? The God, just strike me down right now, please. Please. I'm back. It is I, Apex Monsoon,
and I am a cosmic ghost pirate, in case you forgot. New listeners listening to this are probably super fucking confused, but, you know, if you've been listening to the Black Hoodie Alchemy show since the beginning, this is a really cool payoff. You know, it's a shame that you are not in on it, because I'm basically the coolest character at this point. And, you know, I complete this full circle, everybody. Who's giving you bigger payoff than that? Arrgh! God damn it! I disappeared, and then a muscle tornado became me, and I am him. It's all one and the same. You just gotta learn to trust yourself, matey. There's a little cosmic ghost pirate inside all of you, and he is waiting to be a captain. And that is not a Captain Morgan reference. That is a personal reference to goddammit. And, you know, I've got some cosmic ghost pirate stuff to do, but I will be back. Arrgh, matey, I'm a fucking ghost pirate, and I surf the cosmos. But I'll see you later. And, you know, don't forget that I'm really fucking cool. All right, goodbye.
I swear by Rick Simpson oil. I've worked at dispensaries, I've grown in facilities, so I've had a lot of experience making it and selling it, but like, yeah, that shit is miraculous, truly. Like, I got a really bad wasp sting or hornet, one of those, where it was just right on my hand and it sucked. And I was like, RSO is great for anything. It helps with my eczema. So let me put it on this giant welt here. And it was still a welt, but it went from searing pain to just a mild, like, red little pimple. It's like unbelievable. Like, this shit really does damn near anything, it seems like. So what is some of the cannabis studies with mushrooms? That rings a bell. Like, I've heard people talk about that before, but I don't think I know anything about it, really.
There's studies with lung and breast and can't remember what other types of cancer that respond well to Rick Simpson oil and the turkey tail mushrooms. And so that the combination of both those things together is amazing. And that's what I was taking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Turkey tail mushrooms. That does ring a bell. Interesting. So what were some of the other plants that you ended up developing? Because I love it. So reminiscent of, like, I'm sure a lot of people, it'll ring a bell for them. That's how, like, Western society was told that the natives found, like, the ingredients for ayahuasca as the plant spoke to them. And there's a lot of examples of that, the more you look in comparative religion. So it's a lot more common than you think. And I mean, shit, I don't have anything pulled up in front of me, and I don't like to derail in the middle of conversation, but I know, like, anybody can go. It's kind of surprising how many open studies there are where you can just Google it, like looking into the plant electromagnetic expression, and like they interact with their environment and the people that are growing them. Like, science knows this now. It's not even debatable. I mean, shit, if you've grown plants, you see that they have like a day-to-day expression. They're living things. It's really cool. So doesn't surprise me at all that, especially since you're attuned to those kind of things, that you were able to have the plants speak to you, quote unquote, in that way. So what was that like? And what were some of the plants that spoke to you the most?
I gathered on my walks. We have tons of mistletoe. Mistletoe is great. The berries and the leaves are great. Daughter, witch's hair. It's a parasitic plant that grows on plants. And I gathered lots of that. Different types of lichens and mosses. And we have a lot of turkey tail here, and we have a lot of shaga here. So I gathered
Shaga's good.
Those up. And then also we've got chaparral, which is a really powerful plant that is a natural broad spectrum antimicrobial, antiparasitical, antibiotic. And so I was also taking that as well. And from what I was gathering wildly, that's what I was making medicine with those. And then other things too that I had to procure elsewhere. But yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, and Amanita too. I was using Amanita tincture because in Slavic folk medicine, it's a treatment for cancer.
Whoa. Okay. That's the mushroom, correct?
Yeah.
The one that's polka dotted to give people a visual out there. Now, I've always been confused by that one, and maybe you can help me out here because it seemed, you know, like it showed up in Alice in Wonderland. People say that Lewis Carroll might have enjoyed some of it. It has shamanistic purposes. I've heard that, like, and I'm just going off kind of dishing out what I can remember, so you can clarify it for me. But maybe some of those shamanistic rituals, like maybe it was a different mushroom, but they would ingest it and then people would drink the urine of the shaman in some cases.
Yeah, or the reindeers that eat them.
I have heard that.
Yeah, Northern Europe, the reindeer love Amanita, so they eat it, and then people walk around with these buckets trying to catch the
urine. Well, but it's also toxic in certain preparation or when it's raw or something. What is the deal there?
Yeah, you have to prep it a certain way. So
okay.
I was taught that you peel off the red skin and make your medicines with the red skin, that you don't want the fruiting body because there's the things that are going to make you violently ill are going to be in that, the fruiting body. So it's the mature skin off a mature cap. So you peel it off and then you use that to make the medicine. And it's real smooth because if you use the whole Amanita, it's very unpleasant.
I bet.
It's unpleasant.
Yeah. Growing up in Alaska in the summer season, there's a lot of Amanita that grows around. I picked some once when I was like 19, and I kept finding people saying different things about it. And I was like, you know, this is a whole rabbit hole. I'm going to have to come back to this if I really want to try it. Like, I got other shit going on, so I just tossed them out. But that's good to know. It's interesting. Isn't it like it's not psilocybin, it's like muscimol or something like that.
Yeah,
is
a completely different chemical. Yeah,
but it's mildly psychedelic, is it?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. What is the difference between, like, in feeling?
It's a more of a feeling than a visual. I feel it in my body. It's like, for me, it's a body high, kind of like MDMA, sort of.
Fascinating.
Almost. Yeah, I like it. I really like Amanita. Hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Really hard to get a hold of.
Well, not to dwell on unpleasant things, but for the sake of very positive alchemical reasons, I just would really like to hear, in however much detail you'd like to get into, about that sort of that tower moment of getting that diagnosis and deciding, like, go, you know, what's going through your head. Because I think, you know, there's at least someone out there that, you know, is in some phase of a similar experience, or even if not cancer, you know, there's a lot of people going through those defining moments. And you know, I certainly have myself, and I am just always fascinated by what people are genuinely able to overcome. And talk a lot about mental health on this show, but fuck, like, cancer into remission, that's a whole new level. That's just like, there, that would make some of the strongest people just crumble. You know, like, I think, you know, just to give context for the hell of it, I was thinking about this conversation earlier, like what to say and things, and cancer is just a scary word. It's like, it's we talk about all sorts of dark, terrifying things and murder and cults and demonology on this show, but like, I don't even like to say the word cancer all the time, you know, because it's like, I don't want, you know, I'll read books about demonology and not be concerned because I don't know. I know my place and my beliefs, and I'm not concerned about letting, you know, for lack of a better term, I feel trained to a certain extent. But cancer, like when you hear old superstitions about, like, you know, people in the Navajo desert, it would be like, you know, don't even mention skinwalkers. We don't want to bring that around. And I think, oh, come on, you know, someone's got to find those guys out there. But I think about, you know, like it's almost instinctual, like a gut feeling, like, oh, I don't want to talk about cancer that much. You never know. Like, I don't know. It's but and obviously that's, I don't take that seriously, but it is almost like a genuine gut reaction. And I think a lot of people feel like that. And so to come face to face with it and not crumble, but actually have it light a fire and do something about it is impressive. And what was that like? Like, I'm sure it was defeating at first.
Actually, no, I was just nice. Like, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Was my attitude.
And hell like, yeah.
My oncologist thought I was in denial, and she just thought I was cuckoo clock crazy. And it's like, no, I told her, I go, I am not going to die. I don't accept this. I don't believe that I'm going to die. I know my body, and I know that I was sick. And I sought help, and I finally found out what it is, and I think that I'm going to be okay. And she's all like, do whatever you want to do. Like, okay.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And so I did what I wanted to do, and I got remission, and that's all I can be thankful for. And hopefully I can convince others to be more forceful when they have a situation happen like this. You can't crumble. You can't surrender, because it's like, I could have easily fell apart and like come home and give up like most people do. They told me I have 3 months to live. It's like, fuck that. I don't believe that's the case. I don't believe that's the case. I don't believe that that's my reality, because I just don't believe that was the case.
And yeah. God bless.
Yeah.
What kind of advice?
You just got to fight. You just got to fight.
Hell yeah. Amen. Navigating the medical field today with an eclectic mindset is such a fucking headache. And I know a lot of people, like, it's not like you think that all doctors are bullshit. Obviously there's science involved, but you know, like, I'll use myself as an example. Like, I'm just wary of all the industry, you know, like, it's hard to separate the honest profession from just the money machine, especially in today's world. And then, and so there's that. And then there's the other hurdle of having a conversation, wanting to have an honest conversation, but feeling incapable of doing it because these doctors don't even want to, they should at least have like some sort of open-minded Jungian approach where like, I should hear this patient out because, you know, it's important to see where they're coming from. Like, I am treating them, but even if I don't think that I don't agree with what they're saying, like, but everyone's so dismissive in the medical field. It's just like waving you off, like in one ear, out the other. And I think a lot of people like you and I and our listeners kind of just like a gut reaction to just kind of say like, all right, fuck you then, you know, I'm going to do my own thing. And I think that's a good mentality, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And you didn't. You kept doctors around. Yeah. You kept, you know, you're steeped in medical science. How do you navigate that specifically? What advice would you have for people about that? Because that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's hard because I have health insurance that's part of a health management system. So they actually have a thing called the tumor board, cancer board. So these are like randomly selected nurses and doctors that decide what kind of treatment you're going to get, and they approve like anything. So And that they also say, no, we're not going to pay for that. And I had two incidents where they don't want to pay for it. And I had my doctors gang up on them and said, no, she needs this and she needs that, and you're going to pay for it. Wow. But I had people on my side fighting for me. And there's times where, like, I hear people say, well, they're not going to pay for this and not going to pay for that. So then they have to suffer. So you really, you're like, for my situation, I was lucky, but I feel bad for other people because they're stuck in that medical health management system, because there's private doctors that are amazing, but they don't take insurance. Mm. They're cash only, you know, and because I had consultations with some of these private doctors, and, you know, I had to pay them cash and I had to pay them their regular fees. And I'm like, oh my God, because it's expensive to get the real kind of doctor that you want, that works with you and is alignment with your beliefs and is going to fight for you and stuff. And I think also what helps is trying to get into research programs, because I was trying to get into research programs at the same time, and they're wait listed, but you do get some pretty good treatment through university research programs. They're doing all the cool stuff, like UCSD, that's in San Diego. They're doing cancer and cannabis, cancer and mushrooms. And they're also doing research with end of life care and psychedelics, and, you know, hospice care with psychedelics and all kinds of cool stuff. But it's getting, these are the universities that are putting out the new doctors. So the new doctors over time are more accepting of that, you know, archaic technology, I like to call it. The old ways, the original medicine, that's the original medicine, you know.
It truly is.
But yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is like, if you know, you can only change your doctor once a year and all that. So it was really hard for me. I had to like stick with these people and have my fingers crossed and do visualizations and actualization and everything. It's like I had to do everything I possibly could, because I was by the time I was diagnosed, it was too late for treatment, really. I couldn't argue with that, because it's true. Like, after stage two, there's not much you can do. I mean, they can keep you pain-free and not suffer, but they really don't like spending money on stage three and stage four. And I had to fight. And so now that I'm in remission, you know, I don't have to worry about that anymore, because, you know, they'll treat me because I'm treatable now. Now I'm treatable because, you know, my body responded to their treatment, but it was actually my own treatment.
Yeah.
So now I don't have to worry about them denying me care, because I'm not dying again.
Damn. And it's interesting the way you describe like the best case relationship with a doctor. It's almost like you need, if you're in a, especially if you're in a serious situation like that, you need to look for a doctor like you would an attorney. In a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
Very interesting. Well, I know that and obviously there's certain stuff you couldn't, and I wouldn't want you to go into about this, but you do a lot of work with clients, and I'm kind of curious if you would, if you have any stories, like what are some of the most harrowing experiences you've had with clients, like getting over certain ailments and so forth?
Oh gosh. I've had clients that I've helped treat and for different things, and they did really well and their health improved and they had nice quality of life. And then I have had other clients that they threw all the conventional medicine at their condition and there was nothing that was going to help it, because it's just, there's nothing you can do. And I tried to help, like with energy work, and it's just sometimes there's things that aren't meant to be, and sometimes we are beings that aren't meant to be, and there's not much that you can do. And that's sad, because, you know, I always believe there's got to be something else that you can do. And, you know, they do exhaust everything, you know, holistic and conventional, and that there's a point where it's like, you know, you're making them suffer by trying to treat them. And then you got to let them know it's okay to let go. Cause that's the thing, is like, human beings will put up with a lot of suffering because they think it's making you happy that we're still around. But, you know, they're waiting for you to give them permission to let go and be done. And that's the sad part, is because I had a few clients that had to go into hospice, and that's what they're waiting for their family, is to give them the permission to go. And that's what they wait for. It's hard to let go when you love somebody. And so they stick around and they'll suffer through a lot of pain because they want to be there for their family. And that's the one thing you can do for someone that's suffering, is to give them permission to let go. Because they'll stick it out as long as they can, and they'll suffer through it just because they think it's making you happy and that they're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of reminds me of in like an inverted way, or like the opposite side of the coin, like the Kevorkian sentiment. Like, I'm not an advocate for people offing themselves. I think, you know, there's always another way to do it, but I'm also, you know, I'm pretty libertarian for the most part. I don't fuck with politics that much. It's all a goddamn joke, but I really want to live and let live. And you know what I like about like all the Kevorkian protocol, for all its controversy, Kevorkian seemed like a real genuine dude, and he was always an advocate for this extremely elongated process of sit and wait and think about it, and like, and don't just rush into it. So yeah, there's definitely, whether or not it's your decision, it's not something that you should rush into. So I feel you, where it's like it's a process. Yeah. I can only imagine, but I definitely, it's heavy stuff, but in positive ways. What, let's get a little heavier, like, cause I think about this a lot, in different ways. Survivor's guilt being like the colloquial phrase, but that's not quite what we're getting at. But just wrapping your head around, like, you know, like you said, there's got to be something that we can do. And a lot of times there is at least something we can do, but like, what the fuck? There's those times that, I don't know, you clearly it's out of our hands and it's some sort of bigger picture thing, but. And I guess the easiest thing to say is, like, I don't know, you could phrase it different ways, but like, God works in mysterious ways. But that's easier said than done. Like, it's easier to hear that than it is to process that. Like, how do you, and you've dealt with that a lot. So how do you, what's your mindset on that?
I do have a little bit of survivor's guilt when I go to the oncologist's office, because a lot of the people that started going when I started going are no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And then I see people there that, you know, they haven't been told anything about nutrition or exercise, because, you know, my oncologist was upset with me because I still went hiking and exercised every day. And like, you have to take it easy. And I'm like, why? And look, I feel good. I'm going to move my body. So I do feel bad when I go, because I like, oh, I just wish that I could tell these people about Rick Simpson oil.
Yeah.
I really wish I could. And I'm also taking this other stuff called low dose naltrexone. I'm using it as a cancer prophylaxis. It was, I'm using it off label. It was a court ordered drug for people with substance abuse problems. They found that the people that were taking this medicine under court order that had cancer, it helped them go into remission. So now I'm taking it to maintain the remission. It's an immunomodulator. So it helps my immune system recognize and kill any new cancer cells that are coming into the body. But yeah, I wish I could just sit down with people and say, eat this, don't eat that. And all that. And as far as like the drive to live, I mean, look outside your window. I mean, there's like a wonderful world out there. And I have all these little side projects. Like, for the last 5 years, I've been helping reseed on private property peyote in Baja California to restore the peyote population because it got stripped in the 60s and 70s. People went crazy and went and harvested all this natural wild growing peyote. So there's some private property that I've been going with people, and we've been taking peyote seedlings and planting it, and all these other things that I have. And you know, I have one of my animal totems are frogs, toads, and amphibians. So there's a bunch of wetlands that we have out here. So I have a pickle barrel on my patio, and I breed toads and frogs, and I go take them back to their environment, and just trying to keep the population up.
Wow, so that's awesome.
I do all these crazy things, and that's why I had to live, is I have all these things that I like to do, and those were important to me. And I guess that's my selfish reason, my desire to live, was I have things to do on this earth, and I'm going to do them.
Yeah, I really feel you, because even with things like drug addiction, it's it's so wild to watch some people bounce back with just burning brighter than they ever did. And some people just getting stuck forever in the cycle. And you know, it's hard to put your finger on whatever's going on there, that like intuitive divine spark, but you see it when it happens. And like, I had a friend, you know, Bob, he's dead now from alcohol poisoning, but, God bless him. I grew up with him, and he was a guy who was, he was a wild dude. He grew up in a Russian orphanage and was adopted by like fairly wealthy parents, but he was off kilter. He was a really nice guy, but just had like a wild streak and drank like a fish, like even as a young dude. And, he was always shooting the shit with me about esoteric stuff. And I would talk to him as we got older, like, dude, you know, you're going to die eventually if you keep this up. Like, you can't keep doing this, man. He's like, yeah, I know. You know, I got to stop. I know, like, all, you know, we talk about reincarnation and different things. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to find the bigger picture, but I don't know, man. I like to drink, and it gets me. And, you know, like even when I try not to, and he just couldn't figure it out. You know, I hope he figured it out somewhere by now. But yeah, it's, you know, God bless anybody that can just, there's no like surefire recipe, but you got to find the way to stoke that flame. Even if it's all your lovely alchemical daily chores, like repopulating the toads and frogs, like if you really, you gotta, yeah, I don't know. You gotta find that inspiration though, like even in the small things. So more about alchemy, like what is, you've elaborated a little bit on your daily practices. Let's get into that a little more. Like, what are some of, I don't know, like some inner mythological like plot points for you? Like, are there any gods that you have special connection to? Are there any like ritual and ceremony that you like to engage with the most?
Mostly,
because you essentially have the viewpoint that like the earth in that animist way, like everything around you is what you're communing with, right?
Yeah, mostly I start my day off, you know, I do some meditation and some gratitude exercises, and then I feed myself and make sure I eat something that is going to help my body heal. Because that's the thing, is I've had to eliminate a lot of things from my diet to change my health. And also, like, I'm not feeling that great emotionally, I try to transmute that so I'm in a better mood, so I'm not meeting people bringing that mood with me, which I hate doing. I hate carrying that into a session with clients. And Gods, not so many gods. I favor a few, but mostly I venerate an ancient Greek scholar named Hypatia. If anything, she's the person I consult with daily.
Mm.
So
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with that name. I'd love to hear more.
She was a Greek scholar and a scientist, and one of the few females accepted into their scientific societies in ancient Greece, and just the men just didn't like her because she was a woman and a scientist and, you know, a philosopher and a scholar. So they attacked her one day and tore her off her chariot and tore her clothes off, and they scraped all the skin off her bones with shells and set her on fire, and that was the end of Hypatia.
Holy fuck. Oh my god.
So she's not a god, but she's someone I venerate daily.
Yeah, almost like a Joan of Arc-ish type figure. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to ancient history like that, there could potentially, I mean, there's like telephone game stuff one way or the other, but that's like an actual historical figure, right? Just to clarify. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Wow. It's a wonder that she made it as far as she did. God bless her. Like, I can't believe, like that. It's what a weird story. Like, you'd think that if she had made it that far, she would have kind of proven herself and been like, oh man, that chick knows what she's doing, even if I don't like it. But I guess there was a tipping point, and good God. It's like that's worse than like tar and feathering, I'd say. Oh my God. And it took me a while to realize that tar and feathering is not just a painful humiliation. Like, that was a death sentence for sure. Your skin becomes fused, and it's only a matter of time before you're toast.
Yeah, but
do you, like, not to put you on the spot, because that sounds like something, you know, like history kind of got to buff up on sometimes, even if you're familiar with it. But like, do you have any more details about what was her name again? Because that's a fascinating character.
Hypatia.
Hypatia.
Yeah. And I learned about her as a kid watching Carl Sagan's Cosmos, because she's someone that she's like a science hero to him.
Nice.
And so that's how I found out about her, was through him.
Okay. Very interesting. Yep. Carl Sagan's a champion. Gotta love that dude.
Yeah.
Well, what would you say for, like, we've talked about dealing with the medical industry, and we've talked about, potentially navigating your alchemical pursuits within the medical industry, and also about dealing with some of that end of life type action. Now, I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on dealing with chronic pain, I guess, you know, to not mince words. Yeah, because that's a huge thing. It's a whole enchilada to have a tower moment that you have to, figure out your position towards. But then chronic pain is like the Chinese water torture of health. And it's just constant. And almost everybody's got some sort of chronic pain. So damn near everyone can relate to it. I've got a bad hip, and I'm sure it'll get worse over time, but work with it as it's not that bad, but like I have the feeling that when I'm 70, that's going to be the thing that irritates me the most, you know what I mean? So like there's also that impending doom kind of sense in a way. And you just kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not rehab it, but like work with it and strengthen it, you know, in your lifestyle, and just like had the whatever blow is to come. So what's your stance on chronic pain? How do you deal with that?
Well, I've had chronic pain most of my life. So when I was little, my mom and dad's weird hippie friends taught me like transcendental meditation and doing all kinds of work, mental work, to kind of help me compartmentalize my brain. So they taught me how to put the pain in a certain spot so that I can function. And so you just learn how to function. The longer you have chronic pain, the easier it is to deal with. It's just, the hard part is when someone's new to chronic pain and they just like, it drives them crazy, like really quick, because they're not used to it at all and they don't know what to do. And there's very few medications that address chronic pain, to be honest. Not even opiates address chronic pain. So there's new pain medicines being developed from marine and reptile venoms. So they don't cause addiction. They don't mess with the opioid receptors. They just kill pain. And you can have as much as you want. It's just a matter of having it go through all the approval, testing and whatnot. And hopefully in the next 5 years, the stuff will be on the market. Hopefully. But yeah, wow. I mean, you just, there's like methods of meditation and visualization and different things that you can use to deal with chronic pain. Unfortunately, you just have to learn how to deal with it. And some people choose to go crazy and then they go look for pills on the street, which is it's still not solving the chronic pain problem.
Right.
You really need to train your brain to like ignore it.
Yeah, you know, opiates are just like, even epidemic aside, they're no bueno, really. I don't
do well with them. I don't. I always have problems with them. That's why I just use them for like surgeries and stuff. Because
yeah, they have their place, and
they agitate me.
Yeah, I've never tried opium. I would totally be open to like trying it once, because that's way different than heroin. That's much milder for anyone, like without getting into the semantics. But I have, like, you know, I've experimented in my heyday. I tried oxys and things, and I always enjoyed cannabis, and I was able to come across it living around Anchorage. So like weed was always around there. So thank God I always had my limits, for sure. But that said, like, so I know what opiates feel like. And it doesn't help with the pain at all. Like, in the moment, you feel better. But because it's just masking things, you feel worse afterward every fucking time. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, yeah, that just becomes a compounding issue. Like, that was a wake-up call for me. It was like, man, even if I enjoyed this stuff where I felt like I wanted to do it more, like, I don't think my body would let me. I'm waking up with too many aches and pains because I'm ignoring my body. And like, I only did it a handful of times, but enough to know what it was like. And yeah, I don't know. God bless anybody in the, that's all I can say with medical stuff. Sometimes it's just like, God bless. I was talking with, Max Comus and Justin, the Eastern mysticism and health. And, I said, I feel way more capable dealing with mental anguish and like navigating mental trauma even than I do physical stuff. And Max was surprised. He felt so much the opposite. And he was like, the mental is intangible and all these things. And yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, but I don't know why I still stand by what I said. Like, the mental seems, I don't know, even though it's less tangible, it's something that you can wrap yourself around easier. Like, the physical, there's only so much you can do, truly.
Yeah, that's true.
It's weird. True. Well, there's no need to wrap this up quite yet. So I'm curious what follow-up you have in terms of, like, you know, because I've also shit on the word advice, even though there's a time and place for it. Like, there's a difference between just taking someone's word wholesale, which is what I think advice encompasses a lot of the times, and then listening to someone else's experiences and, you know, just taking that into account, some food for thought. So, like, What food for thought do you have for people in it's maybe things that you feel like are important that we haven't gotten to yet in terms of trying to the alchemy of their body? You know, there's everyone's different and there's a lot to navigate.
Definitely start doing meditation exercises and like learning your body and how things feel in your body and what things make it feel good. What foods make it feel good? What foods nourish your body? And just I even tell my clients to keep a journal and start being mindful of what they eat and drink and how they're feeling emotionally. And it's
that's
like,
smart.
Why are you waking up in a bad mood? What happened the day before? And things like that. And just you gotta be the captain of your ship. You can't rely on other people to do it for you. And it's sad because people get lost. And then they look to the external too much instead of the internal.
Yeah.
And worrying about the outside world instead of like, there's a lot going on in here that we need to address. And it does help. I think it helps me to do that.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between being smart and being observant. Like yeah. You have to be observant of your body. There's a lot of smart people that do not treat their body well just because they're not really paying attention.
No, they're not.
Yeah, you wake up with a stomach ache and wonder why. Like maybe it was all the junk food you ate right before you fell asleep.
Yeah.
I remember something. I bet you've got some sort of opinion on this. As a fun wild card, what do you think about the suppression of medical discovery in our modern day and age? Like people talking about like cancer doctors being assassinated and these things. And it's been a while since I've gone down those rabbit holes, but I've tread enough of that territory to know that people do get taken out sometimes. I don't know, pretty open-ended, but what do you think about navigating that? That's like an extra layer on top.
It happens. And if they don't get killed, they get smeared to the point that their knowledge is deemed useless or false or whatever. And they'll use their reputation outside of the workplace, because there's a lot of people in the psychedelic community that work for big pharma and they work for the big medical corporations. And I have friends that are actually these people, and those jobs give them the opportunity to travel and also get into the lab, because you can't set up a big ass lab in your house.
Right.
You can't. So it gives them the opportunity while they're working for these companies, it gives them the opportunity to discover things on their own, because these companies are putting them in the rainforest of Costa Rica and in the Himalayas to go look for new drugs and new medical discoveries, but they're also doing their own personal research on the side, because you can't afford to do that outside of working those jobs. So when people get mad at big pharma, big medicine, it's like, well, a lot of our friends actually work for these people. They're the ones that are helping push cannabis medicine and psychedelic medicine through. And, we got to thank them for it. But yeah, I mean,
that's a great point.
They are. They're like, there'll be somebody that's got a new compound discovery that is going to change the world. And then a competing company doesn't like it. And then that person, like, you know, all of a sudden this person wakes up and there's a corpse in his bed. And what happened? And then he's going to prison for murder that he didn't even do, because these people have so much power that they can arrange those kind of things, and or they'll ruin their reputation. And then they lose their jobs and they lose their academic status, and then they become a nobody and, you know, things like that.
Damn. Yeah. I like how you frame it too, because I think it, gives credence to the big picture, like shadowy implications, without getting too wild. Like, you know, sure, terms like Illuminati, like you could use them as like colloquial phrases, but when you're getting down to brass tacks, it just, I don't know. It's a lot more multifaceted than that. And I think that money and clout throughout history are the biggest factors. Like, shadow politics, definitely a thing. And we can see recurring themes. Absolutely. But like, it's psychology in the long run. You don't need a multi-thousand year conspiracy to understand why psychopaths want money and clout. You really don't. And it's the same thing. It seems to me, well, it definitely is this in Egyptology, and it seems like it's a clear comparison in like the medical field. It's money and clout. Like, there's so many plot holes in Egyptology now that just don't make any fucking sense. And we also have better explanations now, but these people have this stronghold for no goddamn reason, but they don't want to update their textbooks and, you know, have to relearn some new stuff. Admit that they were wrong. Yeah. So I don't know. It seems like that's a lot to do with the medical field as well. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. There is a lot of people in the psychedelic community that are like big time scholars and hold board positions with some of these corporations. And, you know, it's like they also do that, but then there'll be somebody doing research on a compound and then they'll also trash that person too, because that's competing with their discoveries. So it's just really weird.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's why a lot of people have to like keep what they're studying secret, or they just it just gets published as a paper and then it gets shelved. And that's where I found some of the things that I used in my protocol, was I found all these shelved studies. And it's like, well, I'm going to try that. It's not going to kill me. I'm going to try it. And it's sad because there's all these things that are out there that could be made into medicine that is not going to get done because they don't find it lucrative, even though it's going to address a disease or condition. There's a lot of people that have it. It's just they feel like they're not going to make money off of it.
So yes. Weird. Yeah. Sad state of affairs.
Yeah. If they can't make money off it, they don't really care. And it's sad that, you know, there's very few big pharma companies that are invested in cannabis medicine. Very few. Very few of them are. But
well,
other countries, in Canada, they give that as a pain medication option. They give you cannabis as a pain medication option, and other countries too, they give it to you. I think South Africa gives you cannabis as a pain medication option when you're hospitalized.
Wow.
So, because there are some prescription cannabis meds, they're horrible, but you know, if you have a choice, I guess I would take that over an opioid.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, damn, this has been powerful and fascinating. Trying to think, last call in my head, we really ran the gamut here. And I think there's a lot of good food for thought for people trying to tackle any sort of medical obstacles right now. Because, you know, you can go seek out doctors, but yeah, like, you have a lot of insight when it comes to bridging the gap between your inner beliefs and trying to navigate that medical field. That's a really tough one. So I hope people enjoyed the conversation and got something out of it. I really appreciate you having this chat with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And
thank you.
Where can people follow up with you?
I have a link tree. I think I gave it to you. I'm not sure.
Yes.
You can find me on Linktree and then they can contact me through that.
Cool. Yeah. Linktree is great. Got all the action. If you're a listener and don't know what that is, you should be well aware. That's pretty convenient. So I don't know. Black Hoodie Alchemy, Patreon, Discord. You can check out my Linktree. It's all in the show notes, everybody. Thank you so much, Miss Leticia Martinez,
for your
alchemical expertise and your insightful, I try to find different ways to describe things, but when in doubt, just shadow work. Like, talked a lot of shadow work in here, dealing with medical grief, and yeah, I, it, like I said, you know, even cancer to me is like it's a weird word to bring up. So yeah, this was therapeutic for me even a little bit. So I appreciate that. And yeah, don't forget, folks, follow up with her. And as always, I am Anthony Tyler. You have been listening to Black Hoodie Alchemy. Don't forget to smoke weed and God bless.